just knowing that there are others throughout the world reading these psalms. As I sit alone in my room, there are others in other rooms reading the psalms with me.
Welcome to Psalms for the Spirit, a podcast about spirituality and resilience through the lens of the biblical psalms. I'm Kieran Young-Wimberly, a Presbyterian minister and spiritual director from the U.S., but living on the north coast of Ireland. I've been working closely with the Psalms for about a decade now, arranging, recording, performing Psalms set to Celtic melodies, along with my dear friends, the McGrath family from Dungannon, County Tyrone. And through the years, I've heard how the Psalms help people through times of trouble, through times when the mountains seem to be falling into the sea, times when the world is in upheaval, either on a personal level or on a collective level. In this podcast, I'm inviting friends and respected teachers to explore with me how the Psalms lift our spirits in difficult times, how they lead us toward healing and hope, and about the connection between spirituality and resilience. Today's guest is Sarah Griffith Lund, a minister and author who has focused her life's work on breaking the silence about mental illness. In her moving memoir entitled Blessed Are the Crazy, Sarah tells her story of growing up in a family struggling with serious mental illness and of finding blessing in the midst of her at times harrowing journey. And in her book Blessed Union, she broaches the subject of mental illness in the context of marriage. When Sarah heard about this podcast, she got in touch with me to suggest that we talk about the connections between the Psalms and her work with mental illness, and I'm so glad she did. With her generous and gracious spirit, Sarah talks me through the stark realities of mental illness today, made even more extreme because of the pandemic, and how the themes of the Psalms speak into that life experience shared by so many. In our conversation, we talk about walking through the valley of the shadow of mental illness, sitting at the table with mental illness, and finding ways to speak into the silence about mental illness. I felt grateful for Sarah's gentle but firm reminder that we simply cannot stay silent when lives are at stake. Listeners, there is some heavy content in this episode, so please do ensure that you have proper supports in place if needed, or listen to a previous episode. I'd recommend episode 2 on building up the habits of resilience in our daily lives. So whatever it is that brought you here, I'm glad you're with us.
I am weary from being alone, alone. I am weary from being alone. Hear my prayer, Lord, my cry. Do not hide your face from me. Turn your ear,
today?
My spirit is held in love. Each day you don't know what comes, and we've had some difficult news in my immediate family, and then my extended family. It's been a rough time. And in the midst of that, I'm so grateful to know I'm held in love and being prayed for by friends and colleagues and my church. And that really matters. It makes a difference
to be held in love when you when you're getting difficult news. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. I feel like I know your family because I've been reading your books and I've heard your story. You're really incredible life story. All the people who have journeyed with you and helped shape you into who you are today.
What I'm finding is that the science that talks about the hereditary nature of forms of mental illness is confirmed by my lived experience. And so what that means is that some families that have the genetic predisposition really experience the struggles of mental health in ways that are pretty far reaching. And so in my own family, the next generation, you know, growing up, the kids and teenagers are starting to experience serious mental illness. And it's so painful to see that and to feel a sense of helplessness in the midst of it. And, you know, it's like in the Psalms, you know, why God, you know, where are you? Why is this happening to us?
Yeah.
You know, are we cursed? You know, I don't believe in that theology that mental illness is a curse, but I can see why people think of that. And so that's why, like in my work, I really try to claim the blessedness and the blessings, even in the midst of the most serious forms of mental illness. We are blessed.
Your story is such an amazing testimony to how that can be. And, you know, I could really see how you journeyed into a place where you have claimed that as your ministry. You've learned through your own life experiences, and you've then been able to offer that gift to other people, which is so powerful. You personally, in your life, did you find the Psalms helpful when you were growing up, or was there any Psalm that was meaningful to you in your spiritual journey thus far?
I was raised in a very ecumenical background, baptized Lutheran, then came into the Christian Church Disciples of Christ, and now I'm ordained and serving in the United Church of Christ. And I say all that because different branches of the Christian family lift up the Psalms differently in worship. You know, in some traditions, there's a Psalm read every Sunday as part of worship. And I love that. Like when I was at Princeton, I went to the Episcopal Church right there next to campus. And I loved how the Psalms seemed to be a central part of worship, you know, sung or chanted. And so I would say growing up, when I would hear the Psalms sung or read in church, that moved me because it was a very human story, very human emotions. You know, this idea that we could cry out to God, that was okay to cry out to God. And I really take comfort in that because usually the movements in those Psalms bring it back to God's faithfulness. So there's that tension of both, an existential tension. That God is both absent and then present, and it's a journey in between those spaces. And so growing up, you know, I think for a lot of folks and for me too, Psalm 23 has been very comforting. I think I heard that a lot growing up in the church, and it's just stuck with me. I memorized it. It was the first psalm I memorized, and it definitely speaks to my spirit today. I reinterpret Psalm 23 in my book.
I saw that. That was beautiful.
And so I think we all have that permission, right? To really tell our true stories through the lens of the Psalms, and how can God speak to us through them?
Yeah. I don't know if you have a copy of that nearby you, but I was wondering if you could read that because it was so beautiful.
Thank you. I would love to. Let me turn to that page. One of the questions I always get with Blessed Are the Crazy is about the word crazy. And I want to share that with you because of my lived experience growing up in the 80s, when we didn't really have a common language for what was happening, and we were not openly talking about mental health challenges. And I didn't know that my dad had bipolar disorder. I just knew as a kid that it was crazy and that it felt crazy to me. And so I am claiming that word that really speaks to my lived experience. I don't use it to call other people crazy, but it's empowering to me to name, to use that really strong, provocative word to really name the confusion I felt and the helplessness in the midst of it. And you'll also hear in the psalm my reference to crazy in the blood. Again, it's that sense that there's something in my family and generation. And is it this crazy in the blood? Is it this genetic predisposition? So this is my Psalm 23. Jesus is my light and gives me all that my spirit needs to carry on. God invites me to trust in divine love so that when the still water runs thick with crazy blood, my soul is restored. God leads me down paths of giving my testimony for the sake of healing. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of mental illness with crazy in the blood, I will fear no evil, for God is with me. God's Spirit comforts me. God prepares a table for all who carry the cross of mental illness. God makes sure there's abundance, more than enough of everything for everybody. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my crazy life. And I will be in the blessed presence of God's healing, light, and love forever.
Powerful. Thank you so much for that. One of the reasons I'm having these conversations with people is I wanted to know more about how the Psalms actually speak into people's lives. And that's a really good example of how you applied it to your particular life and the life of somebody who has grown up in a situation with real serious mental illness in your family, and how your journey was shaped and influenced by that. One of the questions that I have is, how do we read the Psalms from a perspective of mental illness? And I think you do that so naturally because that's your standpoint. But I wonder if, you know, could you flesh that out a little bit?
Thank you so much. One thing that we can all do is believe and accept the facts that 1 in 4 of us, and during the global pandemic, some data has shown that half of us do have a mental health condition right now. Mm. So before the pandemic, it was 1 in 4, but now the numbers are like half, you know? And so the most common ones right now are depression and anxiety. So depression is a sense of hopelessness and despair, this lack of a sense of a future that is blessed, yeah. Having a hard time getting motivated to do things, a lack of creativity and energy. Anxiety is a sense of worrisome thoughts, intrusive thoughts. We kind of obsess over this could go wrong or that could go wrong. And it gets in our way of living, flourishing. Mm-hmm. And then as well, for significant parts of our world population, there is a high rate of suicide. And what is really not spoken about because it's too heartbreaking is that for youth up to ages 24, suicide is the second leading cause of death. That's true in the United States, and we can look at global figures. And I want us to believe these numbers and to also know they're underreported because of the stigma and shame. Mm-hmm. We underreport these realities. So what does it mean that so many of our children and our youth really are thinking of self-harm, mm-hmm. really are struggling with thoughts of despair? And so mm-hmm. when we look at the Psalms and we hear, like in Psalm 88, about being in the pit, and that the strength is drained from them. I am alone, down among the dead, like a body lying in its grave. I used to read the Psalms and think of these as metaphors, like, oh, you know, these are philosophical, theological metaphors for someone who's maybe thinking like, is God, like very intellectually, is there a God or not? All in the head. And I didn't allow myself to really imagine for someone who is having a moment of suicidal thinking, mm-hmm. that this reference about being in the pit could really be literal. And one of the things we know about stigma and shame about mental health challenges is how isolating it is. Right. Feel so alone. And it's something the church really needs to respond to, because unfortunately, our theological history has helped create mm-hmm. the stigma and shame because of interpretations of the scriptures where someone might be demon possessed or have an evil spirit, and that's mm-hmm. how Jesus heals them. And so we've interpreted mental illness as demon possession or an evil spirit or someone's mm-hmm. own lack of faithfulness or sin. Mm-hmm. And that is so stigmatizing. Yeah. And so, you know, for folks who are religious leaders, I would say for priests and pastors, who have depression, mm-hmm. who have bipolar disorder or suicide, it's a crisis of faith, because on the one hand, we have a tradition that says we're ordained we're worthy to preach the gospel. And then it says in the purity codes in the scriptures that priests have to be clean and that illness or disability makes you unclean. So I'm hopeful that looking at scripture and the Psalms through the lens of mental health and disabilities is liberating work.
Yeah.
And that we can bring healing to the harm that's been done in the past in the ways we've stigmatized people with disabilities and mental health challenges. So I'd like to kind of ask, you know, what if the psalmist themselves or someone really close to them had suicidal thoughts or someone they love died by suicide? Might there be a story behind the words?
And what if that was really the case, you know, and what does that mean that that is in scripture?
Yes. And what does it mean about God's response to that, which is I'm just fascinated with how God responds to these cries. And is God being understood as a punishing God who abandons us and leaves us in the pit to die? Or is God a compassionate and loving presence that rescues us from the pit?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think what's interesting about Psalm 88 is that it's known to be a psalm without that hopeful ending. It doesn't have a hopeful twist at the end like so many of the psalms. Even my God, Psalm 22 has a twist at the end where it says, oh, but you, God, you're faithful. I'll declare your name. And it ends hopefully. But this particular one doesn't. And I recently did an arrangement of that one. And it was last summer. And there was something that I found actually very, I guess to use your word, liberating about working with that psalm. And it brought out so many tears for me. You know, it was a psalm that just seemed to capture, it really tapped into the sadness of everything that had been going on. And just sitting with that for days and letting tears kind of flow, being able to really dwell in that was actually liberating and somehow comforting for me. So there is something about that, like deep honesty and authenticity about that particular psalm that really touches us.
It's so healing to name the truth.
Mm-hmm.
In the fall, my niece died by suicide.
Sorry to hear that.
Tragic, shocking, 16 years old. And this psalm speaks to that. And that's where there's so much power to see God reflected in our lives in the psalms. Psalm 88 isn't the only psalm, thank God. Just like my niece's death by suicide, you know, that's not my only story. I carry that story, I carry that psalm in my heart, and I carry Psalm 23, where we survive, where we make it out of the valley of the shadow of mental illness. But not everyone does. So what if our faith communities lifted up all the stories, the story of my niece and Psalm 88, but I think we're afraid. And we're often afraid because we don't want to say the wrong thing. We don't get training on it in theological education. We don't have practice. And so we're kind of overly nice or overly polite, and we shy away from these really hard but life-saving conversations. And so that's my encouragement, is that we do more harm and more danger that leads to death in the silence. Saying nothing, ignoring it, is deadly. So we've just got to trust that God's grace is with us in these really hard situations that crack open this light that can bring so much healing and hope and lift us out of that dark pit. Because we see, oh, we're not alone. There's other people here and God's here. We have enough light to see. Do you shine out?
Salvation.
when you said the word silence, I was thinking that in some ways we're silent because we're actually afraid of the silence that will come after we bring up something that's so difficult, because sometimes there are no words, and yet not saying anything is a worse silence. Bringing up something as difficult as Psalm 88 or the death of a young person, it just leaves us speechless, and yet it needs to be said. But I think people are afraid of the silence that they will be stuck in, you know, where they can't respond and just say, oh, well, it'll be okay, or move past it through easy words. Mm-hmm. But there are no easy words, and sometimes responding to something like that in silence is all we can do. But the other type of silence is when we can't let those stories be shared at all.
Right. And I think of, you know, my God, have mercy. And to thank the person, because I get that question a lot, what do we say? And having a spirit of gratitude, thank you for sharing this with me, for trusting me with this part of who you are. Yeah. And that really acknowledges a person's full humanity, that they are believed, seen, and heard. A lot of times we want to fix or rescue or save. We can't really do any of those things. But we can witness. So just as we're called to testify and tell the stories and break the silence, we're also called to be the women at the cross, you know, witnessing and to tell what we've seen and heard and to share the good news of how God is with us even in the midst of all that happens.
Yeah, because we're grateful for the psalmist having written Psalm 88. I was last summer grateful for that psalm because it tapped into something that I needed to express in myself as well. You know, and I felt a similar thing when I was reading your books, that you were willing to share so honestly about the struggles of your childhood and adulthood. You were willing to really walk through the tough stuff and also to name where the grace was in that.
Thank you. And that is my healing, to go and to claim the blessedness in my book, Blessed Union. It's the story really about marriage and how as an adult, I was diagnosed after I was married with post-traumatic stress disorder and realized that for our marriage to be healthy, I needed to be healthy as a person. I had a lot going on. And so that was really claiming how God's love would bring me through this hardship when mental illness symptoms makes the expression of human love really challenging. Yeah. And that in a marriage or an intimate partnership where there are symptoms of mental illness, it can be very difficult to express human emotion, human love, human intimacy. And there can be periods of disconnection, of loneliness, of despair in the marriage. And this book really helps to claim that God is present there on those lonely nights. God's love is there when you're not feeling the love you desire from your partner. And that was liberating for me, because there's such a myth of this perfect love, and you're going to find that person that will love you perfectly. And it was even harder for me because I grew up, you know, with a childhood where I didn't know that unconditional love from a father. So I kind of had a double expectation that the man I married would fulfill all of my needs to be loved in a way that just wasn't realistic. So that's what I've heard from readers, is they appreciate this invitation to reset our expectations. Not to pressure ourselves or our partners to really be our everything and save us. And going back to the Psalms, that's why I love the Psalms, because it's always talking about God's love and God's power. And there's really very little expectation in the Psalms that it's, you know, others that will come to our to rescue us or save us. It always goes back to God being the source of love. And that's such a faithful witness that I really celebrate.
What I appreciated about your book, Blessed Union, was the idea that we don't need to idealize ourselves or another person or marriage. And similarly, in the Psalms, there's absolutely no idealization of people. The rawness of the Psalms is there's something very true about that. And it reflects who we actually really are in our humanity. And I think what I heard you saying in your book was, when we're together and in a committed relationship, we're still those imperfect beings. We need to give each other space to do our own healing and growing and support one another. And then, yeah, leading that toward, you know, God's love is bigger than what we have to offer.
Yeah. I'm not there yet, but one thing I'd love to do with the Psalms is, as you talk about, you know, they reference all the things. And I recall several of them talk about their enemies and the wickedness and, you know, curse them and like bashing all the enemies. And I'm kind of curious what it would be like when we think of mental health disorders as a disease like cancer or heart disease.
Yeah.
What if we could kind of playfully think of mental illness as the enemy? And just think of the wickedness being, you know, that is who I want to curse. And I want God to like damn mental illness. Because for mm-hmm. some folks, mental illness is so debilitating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my brother, I talk a lot about, has bipolar disorder and he's on full disability because it disables him so much. And he says he would prefer to have a brain transplant.
Yeah.
You know, it's not something that he praises God for. And so for folks like my brother and others, I wonder what it would like to give ourselves permission to express our anger and our frustration in the way the Psalms do about their enemies.
Yeah. So that puts the energy of the anger toward toward the mental illness rather than toward yourself or toward God or whatever.
Yeah, and that's where I go at the end of Blessed Union in this invitation for new vows and to really make the distinction that I love you for who you are as a whole person and not for your worst symptoms or your worst behaviors or actions. And similarly, if we could kind of separate the disorder or the disease from our true selves, and that's really what makes mental health challenges different than other forms of disabilities, because I work in the disability community, that for some folks, say they are vision impaired or blind, they are in a place where that is who they are, and they're very proud of that and proud of being part of the blind community or the deaf community.
Yeah.
And I find that with serious mental illness, that is a really unique distinction.
Yeah, thank you for clarifying that. I think without being really close to that world, I wouldn't have known for sure that that was how people would feel. And then I guess, you know, when you think about the language of enemies, then what does it mean to sit at table with your enemies as Psalm 23?
I love that. I'll just think about my own experience. I have PTSD. Mm-hmm. I'm right now working through some kind of medical trauma that I have. And so I have some upcoming opportunities to really push through that. And so when I think about sitting at the table with my enemies, what does it mean to accept and to look at that trauma in the face and to say, I'm going to make peace with you, that you don't have power over me. You don't have power to harm me. There's enough room here. Soon you will be fed and then you will leave. You will leave the table.
That's true. The banquet's not going to last
forever. Right.
It's a temporary.
Right. You get what you need, I get what I need, and then we can part ways.
You're listening to Psalms for the Spirit, a podcast about spirituality and resilience through the lens of the biblical Psalms. I'm very grateful to those of you who have been listening to this podcast over the past few months. And for those of you who are listening for the first time, welcome. I'd love to hear from you. Do you have stories about what the Psalms have meant to you? How they have lifted your spirits or helped you through a difficult time? You can get in touch through emailing psalmsforthespirit@gmail.com or messaging the Psalms for the Spirit Facebook page. If you include an audio clip, I might just include it in an upcoming episode. Also, I'd like to ask you the question I ask my guests. How is your spirit these days? It's a question that's not always easy to answer. It takes time, space, and intentionality to be able to really listen to our spirits and God's spirit in our lives. If you feel drawn to set aside that time, I wanted to let you know that I'm leading an online quiet day on the 12th of June. See our Facebook page for the link to book on Eventbrite. I would love to share that quiet space with people like you. There will be music and prayer, meditation and reflection, silence and sharing. It'll be a beautiful time, good for my spirit as well as yours, I hope. I'd love to see you there. On another note, some of you have been asking how you might contribute to the production of these podcasts. What you can do is go to CelticPsalms.com to find music by Kieran Young-Wimberly, myself, and the McGrath family from Dungannon, County Tyrone. And on CelticPsalms.com, you'll also find an option for contributing to the podcast. Thank you, and once again, I'm so glad you're with us.
Interested in what you were saying earlier about you used the word liberating, and could you say a bit more about that? Because I think that's an aspect of resilience. Part of what I'm drawn to with that word, I think the Psalms provide us a certain amount of liberation through their expressions, and that helps us to kind of heal and work through things and build resilience in ourselves. So like, can you talk about that a little bit from your perspective and background?
Yes, a lot of liberation, I think, comes from power and control in the best ways.
Hmm.
That we are not victims, mm-hmm. We are survivors. And as survivors, we can claim power. And we can control the situation and be intentional about how we use the power we have. And that is liberating, because we can use our power for healing, for wholeness, for inclusion, for justice, for love, to build the peaceable kingdom, the peaceable realm of God. But we have to be set free to do that. And so liberation is that invitation, that partnership that frees us. And it's intentional, because we don't inherit this liberation. The status quo and the powers and principalities, the structures that are oppressive, are designed to keep us oppressed. And so it's an ongoing, intentional work for our freedom and the freedom of future generations.
Hmm.
It's individual and it's collective.
So what's the link with the Psalms there?
Well, I like how you were saying, you know, we can have a spiritual practice of the Psalms personally. And it's a collective experience, reading the Psalms in the group, in corporate worship, or just knowing that there are others throughout the world reading these Psalms. Yeah. As I sit alone in my room, there are others in other rooms reading the Psalms with me. It's truly a collective prayer. We're never alone when we read the Psalms.
True.
And it gives voice. It's always talking about our relationship to God and to others in a way for me that is so affirming, that I am seen, I am heard, that I matter to God, that God cares for me, and that I have access to this power of God's love. It's very intimate. Mm-hmm. And that is empowering for anyone, no matter your status in the world. You know, we all have this access to God's power.
Yeah, it's intimate while also being collective. So it connects us to the bigger story that's beyond ourselves. So it gives voice for ourselves and others. And that gives us power, I guess, when we find a voice, we are able to find our voice, even in these ancient prayers that have been shared by so many other people. If we find our voice somehow, that is liberating for us.
And I'm thinking too of the echoes from centuries, and that's a beautiful gift. It's our ongoing testimony from the very beginning, right? And you can almost hear the echoes throughout time in all the languages, all the human languages that have carried these Psalms and given voice to them.
Yeah. And then, and when you mentioned that there's so much isolation with mental illness, that it's very poignant that the Psalms, even when they're read in a room on your own, can connect you to other people.
Yes. So to think about the spiritual practice of the Psalms as mental health practice, that what's good for our spiritual health is really good for our mental health as well.
Alone, alone, I am weary.
The question that came up in my mind was, can the Psalms contribute to the movement of breaking the silence about mental illness?
Yes.
I have a feeling I know what your answer is going to be.
Yes, and in fact, you could really say that they are the original testimony.
Though my years come to an end, your years are forever.
What I love is that there's a boldness to the psalmist. They don't hold anything back. And there's no shame. There's no apologizing.
Right.
And that's such a beautiful witness of truth-telling to God and to God's people, not being ashamed to really exclaim their whole range of emotions and feelings and thoughts, that nothing is hidden from God, and to be known so deeply by God and seen and loved anyways.
Creation will fade, but you are eternal. With you
the Psalms are so precious and powerful to me, and I want to encourage all of us to really look at them as a tool that we have in our toolbox when we think about resiliency, flourishing, mental wellness, mental health. There are words and sentences in the Psalms that are gifts that can nurture and nourish us and remind us that we're not alone. Whatever situation we find ourselves in, there is a lot of fear in disclosing our mental health diagnosis to other people. And it's about a 7-year delay from when you first experience symptoms to getting help. And it's thought that that delay, so think of that 7 years where so many people are living in pain that can be helped. You know, there can be treatments. Therapy has helped me. Medications. And so there's so much unspoken pain and unspoken suffering that the Psalms can be our companion, especially in those times where we're not yet able or ready to ask for help.
There's sort of a first step in acknowledging where we are.
That's significant. You know, that is kind of the first barrier, is self-awareness and how stigma is internalized. And so because of stigma, I don't want to admit to myself how depressed I am or anxious I am, or that I have an eating disorder. That feels too shameful to name. So if we can engage in the Psalms and trust the Psalms and us with the Psalms and create that trusting space to acknowledge what is true without shame, and to have the Psalms be our therapist, minister to us, to receive that acknowledgement that we are loved no matter what.
It's really especially powerful to hear from you with your life experience and with your knowledge of the world of mental illness. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, you know, I work with faith communities about mental health, and we underestimate the power that we have in our faith tradition with scriptures. And so the Psalms are beautiful way for us to claim the power that God has given us through these testimonies to bringing comfort, bringing companionship, and reminding us that we're not alone, and that that is beneficial to our mental health and wellness. One of the opportunities for churches that do mental health ministry is a spiritual support group. And it's simply a space where we can tell our true stories and be held by God's love. We're not fixing or curing each other, but we're holding that space. And so I love thinking about how the Psalms can be incorporated into these spiritual support groups that are free from judgment and really encircle people in God's love.
Yeah. Have you seen the Psalms used in that? Or?
Yes. Well, I'm in a spiritual support group that my church runs, and my co-facilitator is a doctor in pastoral care, and he's always got a psalm that he reads at the beginning of our spiritual support group. And it is so affirming to have a psalm read in a context where people are openly talking about anxiety and medication and suicide. It is powerful, and that's liberating. That's transformative. You have the Word of God, and you have our lived stories, and they commingle, and they create something so powerful together.
I love picturing the Psalms being used in that way, setting the tone for that affirming, free from judgment space of listening. Keeping your spirit afloat these days?
Breaking the silence. You know, I think I started our conversation sharing this is a hard time right now and for me and my family. And I'm very tempted to not tell anyone I'm struggling, to keep it to myself. Even though I do this work, the shame and the stigma is still something I work through every day. And so trusting God and trusting others with how I'm really doing is keeping me afloat. Sending the text, asking for prayers, and giving myself permission to ask for help and trusting that I'm being held in community and in God's love.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. So when you are working through the shame and stigma and you're trying to get yourself to reach out, you mentioned sending texts and asking for prayer. Are there any other kind of practical things that you do that you can recommend for people when they feel in that stuck place where they can't get out of their rut or reach out to people to let them know that they're struggling?
You know, I deal with this a lot and I feel like I'm a stupid, weak, no good person. So it's this like low self-esteem, like what's wrong with me? I don't have it together. You know, what's wrong with me? I can't do this by myself. And so to just affirm that you are good, you are loved, and we were created to be in community. You know, we weren't meant to do it alone. And I think our, you know, in American society, especially, there's just rugged individualism. And just this focus on you as a soul person and what you can achieve and to just dismantle that. And that's part of the liberating work. I have a therapist that I've been working with for several years, and that brings me wholeness. And so I would encourage all of us, especially in our pandemic lives, we all have some trauma and we all could really benefit from working through that with a trusted mental health professional.
Mm-hmm. And then just reaching out to friends and loved ones.
Yeah, a lot of times we wait for the crisis to happen. And I've done that too. And it really can be extremely harmful. And so what would it look like if we just kind of set the table? You know, we talked about the feast with our enemies.
Yeah.
Just kind of set the table and knew that some folks might show up. No, I think we're going to have this feast together and there might be some people there I don't really care for. Can you pray with me as I anticipate, you know, what may or may not happen? And even that kind of signaling, you know, that, hey, you know, I'm feeling vulnerable, I'm feeling something shifting, and to normalize that, because mental health is a spectrum. And so we move through it fluidly.
Yeah. When you were saying that, I got the image of inviting others to the table, not only just setting the table for the enemies we may not want to sit with, but then to also fill the table with people we do want to be with, and to invite them to be at that uncomfortable, awkward feast where we're, you know, we're sort of accepting each other and we're trying to get through the meal, but then to make sure that there are people there who are our support network, so we're not there alone.
Yes, because a lot of times with the mental health challenges, we really don't know what's going on. And that's a lot of the journey. There's this unknowing and helplessness. And so being okay with inviting people into that unknowing and the helplessness.
Well, thank you so much, Sarah. You've offered a space here where not only have you shared authentically of yourself, but you've given the space and the freedom for others to be able to express themselves in that same way. So thank you so much for what you do every day.
You've been listening to Psalms for the Spirit, produced by myself, Karen Young-Wimberly, with music by Celtic Psalms. On my website, KarenYoungWimberly.com, you'll find links to what I'm up to and opportunities to connect. You can sign up for the Transatlantic Online Quiet Day on the 12th of June, or send me an email or a Facebook message sharing about what the Psalms have meant to you. Till next time, may our spirits find healing and hope in the days ahead.
Come, Spirit, come, rescue us, we pray. Shield us and save us, and come down to stay.